This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. Unbelievable. Two sweeps in the first round. Now, usually when you get sweeps, it's kind of boring, but both stories are just so incredible that the sweep actually adds to it. Of course, the Blue Jackets knocking off the Lightning, which is incredible. Jody Shelley is going to be joining us in just a bit, former Blue Jacket, Ranger, and of course, working television for the Columbus Blue Jackets. How historic that was. But also, the Penguins getting swept out of the first round by the New York Islanders. Maybe less surprising, but still a shock, and someone that did a great job all season, has done a great job the whole time he's been there on MSG television, is their play-by-play voice, Brendan Burke, and he joins us here on Game Misconduct. It's Don LaGreca, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
You'd like to have center stage sweeping the Penguins, but then the Blue Jackets kind of upstaged it a little bit. And also, I think, just joking aside, I'm not shocked that they won this series. I think they're the better team. They were the better team during the course of the regular season. I thought they matched up well with Pittsburgh. I'm not shocked about the win, Brendan. I'm just shocked that it happened in four straight and that Sidney Crosby had just 1 point.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I think that I felt compelled to remind people over and over again during the series that the Islanders were the team that finished ahead of the Penguins in the standings.
Right.
It just had that feeling like they were supposed to be the underdog. And I think that it's just a label that they haven't been able to shake all year. It was funny, following this Islanders team, you would go into a city and the Islanders would win a game. And then you'd pull up the paper the next day, and everybody tried to explain away the bad night that their team had. That was the theme. It was, hey, we had a bad night. We had a bad night. Not really taking into account that the Islanders were creating bad nights for a lot of teams. They won 48 games in a very frustrating way that makes a team look bad. It made Sidney Crosby look bad for four games. So, they play that brand of hockey that's, it's not flashy to watch, but it is effective, and it is frustrating to play against, and especially when it comes into a four-game series where you've got to see it every single night, and Barry Trotz is, making adjustments and kind of helping it along. They were the better team from start to finish in that series, without question.
Yeah, and watching all of the playoffs, and I think Tampa felt this too, is that sometimes you can squelch the really good players because, listen, you can get away with a little bit more in the playoffs, right? I mean, they can't call everything. Everything's ratcheted up high. And do you think that Barry made adjustments that, hey, maybe we can get away with being a little bit more physical with Crosby and Malkin, a little bit more physical with their star players than maybe we could have gotten away with if we're playing Pittsburgh in some, random game in November?
You know what? I don't. I just think this is the way the Islanders played all year. I mean, they ran people through the end wall. Their forecheck was a difference maker in the series, and it was a difference maker for them all season. They roll four lines. They have the Martin Clutterbuck's Ezekis line that plays 11, 12, 13-plus minutes a night. And that's, even if it's not a penalty-filled affair where two of those three guys kill a lot of penalties. But they're a physical team. They make you go 200 feet. And when they have a chance to check you, they finish their checks. And so they've done that all season. They did it in the series. It didn't look like the Islanders changed anything going into the playoffs, and that's kind of what they were preaching, is like, hey, we've been playing this low scoring physically intense brand of hockey, playoff hockey, all season long. They really looked like the same team that we saw the whole year, and then they just had their way with the Penguins there, as they got some timely saves, and they held Crosby in check, and their penalty killers showed up, and they only allowed three goals in the last three games and six overall in the whole series. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so when did you first notice the change when Barry Trotz took over? I mean, you have been there a couple of years already, so you got to see the Islanders with JT, got to see the Islanders play under the system that they had. So when you started to get ready for the 18-19 season, was there a moment, was there a game where you said, boy, things are just different here. This is a different system. This is a different style. This is something I've never seen before with this team.
Yeah, well, I don't want to say day one, but you could tell that it was a different structure to them from day one. They were very responsible defensively. They were willing to sacrifice offense for defense in the beginning part of the season, and they were okay with that because they knew how important it was to fixing the defensive end. I mean, the story is that they went from last place in goals allowed to the Jennings Trophy in 1 year with pretty much the same personnel. So, it was really from day one where you could see a change in their defensive responsibilities. And then there was a time, Barry Trotz says it was the middle of December, December 15th, where the team started to get on a roll. Mm-hmm. And that's where it started to click, where they were no longer thinking about consciously playing defense. And it just came to them naturally. And then they could focus on scoring goals as well. And so that was kind of a trip in the middle of December where they went, And it started in Colorado, and that was when the Avalanche were just tearing through the NHL, and they had Rantanen and Landeskog and MacKinnon just rocketing up the scoring charts. And the Islanders went into Colorado and check. And that gave them the confidence, like, hey, we can, if we play the way we're playing, it doesn't matter who we play against. Look at these guys. They were, you know, hat tricks every night at that point, and they went in there and shut them down, won the hockey game. I think it was 5-1, and they scored a power play goal against them, and that was it.
Right.
And they continued on in that series, and they did the same thing in Dallas the last game before Christmas, where Dallas was kind of racking up goals, and they went in there and beat them pretty soundly. So that gave them the confidence, and they went on that run starting in January where they really were unbeatable. From December 15th till the end of the year, they had the second-best record in the NHL, you know, tied with St. Louis behind only Tampa Bay. I mean, so really, for most of this season, they've been a pretty good hockey team.
Now, I do believe they wanted to bring John Tavares back. So let's not try to spin something that this was like the grand plan all along. But I just wonder, did it make it easier for Lou and Barry to get everybody to buy in and play this system, knowing that there wasn't one big, huge star that had to make some sort of an adjustment?
It might have. I think that the whole Lou Lamoriello regime and everything that he preaches, right, with the lack of facial hair and, you know, the lack of, I guess, access to his team so they can showcase their personalities. A lot of it is, it's always we before me, and it's the group is the idea, and you kind of sacrifice the individual identity a little bit. And that might have made it easier not having a guy who, you know, is forced into the spotlight because he is a superstar in this league. So that may have helped. I think, though, you know, when you talk about being able to be receptive to the new regime coming in, the 293 goals allowed last year, that got everybody's attention. They knew something had to change. So you had a group of players sitting in a locker room going, somebody tell us how to fix this, please. And then the guy they brought in to tell them how to fix it happens to have all the answers and had just won a Stanley Cup a few weeks earlier.
Right.
They were primed and ready for somebody to teach them, and then they went in and brought in the perfect teacher, and it just kind of came together.
Yeah, and absolutely. And then, you know, following the Devils, and I don't think it's exactly the same, but, you know, with Lou Lamoriello being there, more defensive-minded, being more responsible, has all the earmarks of the three cups that Lou won in New Jersey, and he was always very hesitant to bring in big-name free agents because he felt like the focus would then go on that player and kind of get away from the whole scheme. And I just wonder if there was deep down inside when Tavares chose Toronto, whether kind of Lou thought to himself, all right, let's roll. I mean, we're good. Yeah. If he stayed, we would work with that. But him gone, I think that Lou was fine either way. And maybe deep down inside, maybe he was a little bit happy that maybe he can maybe mold it more in his image, as ridiculous as that might sound.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to turn down, you know, John Tavares on their roster. I think that was always plan A.
Right.
And there's no question that they wanted him. But since he didn't come back, now you just gave a general manager $11 million a year in salary cap to work with. You know, I can't imagine him not being at least excited about the fact that he could build the team and have the cap room and the ability to do it, where he's not kind of squeezing every dollar out of the cap because he just signed a guy for $11.5 million a year. So, yeah, I you know, at the same time, I would have loved to see this team with John Tavares on it. I mean, imagine this team right now, 103 points, you know, second best in the Metropolitan Division by a point behind Washington, swept the Penguins out in the first round. Imagine this team and John Tavares.
Right.
I mean, that would have been fun to watch.
Yeah, maybe, but he would have, the adjustment probably would have been more on him than the rest of the team, because going back to New Jersey, they had McGillney and Gilmore and Andrechuk. I mean, they had star players, but those players had to fit what the Devils were trying to do. I think Tavares would have had to adjust more to the system than the system adjusting to him.
Oh, for sure. And we saw with Matt Barzal. I mean, Matt Barzal was probably a guy who actually admitted that he was reluctant to change a lot of the things that he was doing. I mean, Matt Barzal led the team in points again. He had 85 points last year as a rookie. He finished with 62 this year. And he had to be okay with that, because it wasn't his poor play. It was the fact that he had to change the way the whole team played. And it took him a little bit to buy into it, and he had to get his defensive responsibilities right. And when he got those, he was okay, and he started scoring some goals. But, I mean, his production, way down. If you just look at it on paper, out of context, you go, boy, he had a bad. He finished with, 23 points less than he had last year. But that's not the case when you watch it. He's a much better, much more complete hockey player than he was last year.
And talking to Brendan Burke, voice of the New York Islanders, of course, the shame of the way the system is that he called his last Islander game this year. Unfortunately, MSG's got to step aside for national television. But I think every fan, as much as they love you, will take it because it means the team's in the second round for just the second time since 1993. Are you going to be doing things around the team, though? Is MSG going to use you for pre and post? Are you going to get a chance to be around the team in the second round and further?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think we're still trying to figure out the coverage. We've got, obviously we've got some things to figure out. They will have coverage pre and post game and whatnot. But Shannon Hogan, who does a wonderful job for us, also happens to be ready to give birth to her first child. So she actually missed the game last night, and I think she might be done as final week's home stretch here for her and her family. So I'm not sure. We had Bill Pito step in, and I think he's going to jump on the coverage as well for the rest of the way. But we're still trying to get everything figured out as to how we're going to cover this team, because they deserve it. They deserve wall-to-wall coverage with what they've done this year.
Absolutely. And Brooklyn's going to be hopping, too, if the Nets can find a way to get past the Sixers and the Islanders moving on to Brooklyn. Not to put you on the spot, Brendan, but you're hearing a lot of different information. I mean, what are you hearing about where these games are going to be played going forward? We know it's going to be Brooklyn in the second round, but I've heard some rumors today that maybe back to the Coliseum for the conference final. I thought it was going to be Brooklyn the rest of the way. What are you hearing?
Yeah, it's Brooklyn the rest of the
time. Yeah, I thought
so. Imagine. Yeah, and everybody's, I don't know if they're confused or they just don't understand the process that it is. And this is, yes, it's about money, but this is not about money for the New York Islanders. This is an NHL rule. This is, playoff shares are a big thing where players, they get paid during the regular season and they get paid by playoff shares in terms of the postseason. And that money is determined by how many tickets are sold and how much suite revenue there is. And that's as an NHL as a whole. And then it's divided up among the teams. And so for the rest of the NHL, for the other 15 teams that made the playoffs this year, to cap their revenue by the Islanders not having any suites and only 13,000 seats in the building they're playing in, that's not fair to the rest of the league.
No, exactly.
The NHL won't do that as a business model. This has nothing to do with the New York Islanders. I mean, people are saying, if people are thinking that they're going to the Coliseum because the Islanders want to make more money, that is not the case, not even close.
No, and I tell you, I covered a lot of Stanley Cup Final where there is so much media, they're taking like upper-level sections away from the fans to put media. You can't do that at the Coliseum. You're already working at 13,000, right? So you don't want to go down to 12.5 so that you can fit, a bunch of guys from Saskatchewan that want to cover it and be in the last row of the arena. I mean, so I knew the logistics, and I just wanted to get confirmation from you because it just didn't make a lot of sense. But you know what? I've been in, listen, you call the games, and I call Ranger games there. When that building is full, it's electric. I mean, it may not be the Coliseum because of the history, but when that building is full, and it will be because the Islanders have fans that will make the sacrifice to go to Brooklyn from Suffolk County because these games are so important, when the Barclays filled, it rocks.
Yeah, I mean, and when John Tavares scored the double overtime winner 3 years ago and Barclays Center was the only option, no one was complaining, right? It was awesome in there, and it was full. It just because, they got a little taste of going back to the Coliseum doesn't make it not a good atmosphere for a hockey game, because it will be. It will be rocking. And I'll tell you what, with the way the Eastern Conference is shaken out and with Carolina and Washington, which is a series I've also been working for NBC, they're going to battle it out. They're going to beat each other up, and they're probably going to go 6 or 7. I mean, the Islanders have a legitimate chance of making it to the conference final.
They do.
I mean, that's just watching the competition. They were right there. They split the season series with the Washington Capitals. They actually handled the season series pretty well against the Carolina Hurricanes. And they've got a full week off, presumably, before they have to play another game to get healthy. So,
and that was going to be my last
really good chance of moving on.
And that was going to be my last question for you: rust versus rest. I know that Islander fans want to see Carolina and Washington beat up on each other, and that makes sense. But could it hurt the Islanders with all the momentum they've built if they've got to sit basically a week before they get to play again?
Yeah, it could. It certainly could. They did not play as well out of the All-Star break as they did going into the All-Star break, and that's really the only other break that we can judge this off of. But at the same time, they had been healthy until last night, and Johnny Boychuk missed the third period, and Cal Clutterbuck missed the third period.
Right.
Jordan Eberle was gone for the end of the second period. So under normal circumstances, I would have said, hey, schedule the game tomorrow, let the Islanders keep going. But last night they actually had a few guys banged up. And I think if you were going to say you could have a game tomorrow without Cal Clutterbuck and Johnny Boychuk, or you can have a game in a week and you could have them both back, I think they're taking the week every time. So I don't know what the situation is or how long they're going to be out for if they'd be available tomorrow. But I think that given the fact that they didn't finish the game last night in an elimination game, in a one-goal game, you'd have to bet there was something wrong with them because they're two tough guys. So we'll see what's going on. But I think that right now the rest will help them because they need to be healthy and they need all hands on deck.
I'll tell you what, good luck finding out injuries in the playoffs, but we'll have our fingers crossed.
from Lou.
Yeah. From Lou and sometimes from anybody. But listen, you do a terrific job. Love watching you. Love seeing you over at the rink. And I'll be on this Islander bandwagon watching from afar, man. Enjoy it.
Hey, I appreciate it. It's been a fun ride.
All right. That's Brendan Burke, of course, the play-by-play voice of the New York Islanders on the television side. Always does a tremendous job with them. And, of course, now he's got to sit and watch like the rest of us, but he's going to be doing some work at MSG, too, because that's always a lot of fun. The other big story, the other sweep, I just can't believe I'm saying this. The Columbus Blue Jackets knocked off the Tampa Bay Lightning, the team that won the President's Trophy by 21 points. The team that looked like an absolute juggernaut swept out of the playoffs by a team that didn't clinch a playoff berth until the second-to-last day of the season. And this gentleman who's joining me now was waiting for the elevator after that second to last game of the season when the Islanders, when the Blue Jackets clinched that playoff berth. And that's Jody Shelley. Does a tremendous job on television for them. Former Ranger, former Blue Jacket. And he joins us here on Game Misconduct. What's up, buddy?
Not much. Big day here in Columbus, obviously. A lot of excitement around here. Yeah, can you believe you just said that? They swept the Lightning.
And I'm just going back to the conversation. That game's over. The Rangers had lost to the Blue Jackets. Blue Jackets clinch a playoff berth, and we're waiting at the elevator. We're on our way to Pittsburgh. You guys are on your way, I think, to Ottawa. And we're talking about who do you want to play? You know, is it Tampa? Is it Washington? And I think you didn't seem to be scared necessarily of Tampa, but did you ever dream that this was possible?
No, to be honest with you. I mean, no, I didn't. And, you know, maybe a seven-game series, six-game, you know, it goes either way. You get an injury or something. That was the mindset coming in. But to sweep them, anyone that tells you they thought that is a complete liar. There's no way you would think that. It was so stacked against them. They weren't playing great, Don, at the end of the season either, I didn't think. They were playing okay. But I thought the Rangers, man, that was a heck of a game at the Garden. You know, that scared them a little bit. And then they went to Ottawa, and they'd already clinched. So, okay. But, no, they weren't playing well. And this series, boy, that game one, I don't know if you saw it, but Tampa went up one in the first period, 3-0.
Yeah.
And then the Blue Jackets, it was like the season was over. It was like the script was written for Tampa to stomp them. And they found their game. And this team, which I didn't think was a Tortorella team.
Yeah, that was the feeling, right? Because it wasn't like you guys made those trades at the deadline and everything clicked. As a matter of fact, you kind of fell back in the standings. And that was the exact fear, Jody. It was like, did they get John Tortorella players? You know, and we saw that when he was with the Rangers, right? Trying to turn Gabrick into a shot blocker. You know,
right.
He was the guy that kind of squelched the Stars, forcing them into maybe systems they didn't want to play. But that was the feeling, right? That maybe DeZingle and Duchesne and maybe these guys just don't work under a Tortorella system. And then it just all clicked. Was there a moment in time in this series or at all where you felt like it all kind of crystallized and came together?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was after the first period. And Bobrovsky came out in the second period. Tampa had a power play with a 3-0 lead. He made a big save on Kucherov there. And at the end of the period, he made two ridiculous saves. And at the end of that, I think his teammates went into the locker room and said, well, this guy's not quitting. Let's see what happens. And then they get two goals. I mean, the Savard goal was spectacular. I'm telling you.
It really was.
You could take 10 pucks, 20 pucks, 100 pucks by yourself in the rink with no one else in it and not score the way he did off that post so perfectly. And they come away with a victory, not only a victory, a belief. And I think to talk about Duchesne and DeZingle, two players that came here with no identity. They really didn't know what they had to do for this team, where they fit in. The team itself had no real commitment to what they were yet. So it was kind of like a stare down. How are we going to do this? Where are you guys going to fit in? Are you guys going to show us the way? And then you get to playoff hockey against the best team we've seen here in the NHL in a long time. And that's where it was the perfect scenario for Torts. Torts said, okay, we're the underdog. The only way we're going to beat them is if we all play this way. And then Dzingel figures out that, hey, if I play in structure and I wait for my opportunity, I can score. Duchesne's not out there trying to do too much. Figures out, okay, if I play this way, I'll wait for my opportunities and score. Those things all happen. And within the structure and the buy-in and the belief, we saw something happen that you've seen many times in New York, in the area, I'm sure, is where teams come together in that moment.
You just wonder, is it too easy to say that systems beat talent? Because you saw it with the Islanders, you know, sweeping Pittsburgh, and then you see what the Blue Jackets did to the Lightning. Is it that if you have a system and get everybody to buy in, that maybe that can even out a team that's that has more talent than you?
I'm telling you, it is something to fall back on. And when you see it work, like, you can believe in it. You can have the meetings. You can understand it. You can figure it out. Yeah, this is a great idea. But once you see results from it, and you have players, Long Island's a great example. The goaltending situation there in a system, it's simplified for them. Everything is predictable. Once you have results from that, what the Blue Jackets did early, right away in this series, then it's a dangerous thing. And it always, in tough times or intense times, like last night, game four, pack building, never have this organization seen a second round of the playoffs.
Right.
There's nerves. But there's not nerves as an athlete if you can think about your system, your route, your job in the, you know, with the puck, without the puck. I think of football. You know, those guys run their routes. If you run your route or take care of your man, nose to nose, then that gives us all, you know, if everyone just does their job and does their thing, play after play, then you know it's a good thing. You got to have the talent to be able to do it. You got to have the speed. But yeah, the buy-in in a system with the right group and right talent is—I think it's more dangerous than talent. Yes.
Now, Bobrovsky, Jody, he obviously did not have a great reputation in the postseason. A lot of it was who was playing in front of him. But still, as you said, this team's never been out of the first round. The disappointment of last year, winning the first two games in Washington, only to lose the series. Just what did anything change in him, or just did the personnel in front of him play better?
No, I think it changed in him. I mean, I really think he is the moment, too. To back up to your last question, the other part of that, not just them believing in the system, but Bobrovsky shut the door. I mean, Bobrovsky's been large and athletic and quick and take turns. He's really been a star for these guys, and that's been huge. And, of course, that's confidence, and that's leadership. He's a guy that stands there alone, and you've seen it where goaltenders can grab series or grab moments. They give him so much confidence. He's a guy that, yeah, with the guys in front of him, great. But, no, he's been spectacular for a lot of this year. But mostly in this series, he's been brilliant. And, you know, there's times when, like, the Lightning would score, and then there was a push. But Bob would make two or three saves, tough saves, and then the Blue Jackets would settle down and get on their game again. It was really impressive to watch.
Now you wait. And I just asked Brendan Burke this question, voice of the Islanders. I'll ask you. I'm sure you want the Maple Leafs and the Bruins to beat up each other seven games, every game go 12 overtimes, so they're hurting by the time that they play you. But the rest versus rust, you want some time off, but could there be too much time off, especially with the momentum that was built over the last week?
No, I spoke to a couple of assistant coaches that have coached in this league, and they agree that time off, while the opposition is playing and banging each other up, there's no such thing as too much time, they don't think.
Okay.
It's valuable. Especially now. These guys, this was a demanding system, and you've seen it up close and personal, that the forwards had to play, the defense had to play. In front of Bobrovsky, there's a couple injuries. There's a couple guys we haven't seen in a while. There's this Russian kid, Gregorkov, that may be in the mix. There's some good things that can happen here. If you can get a weekend of rest. So, no, I don't think it's any problem. I think the way they play, the confidence they have, it's a positive.
Any feeling either way? I know the players won't talk about it and the organization won't talk about it, but do you have a strong feeling either way, Boston or Toronto is the next matchup?
Let me put it to you this way. This organization has never had a success against a team wearing black and gold. So why not blue and white? Go for the blue and white here.
The
optics the same. Why not?
I can live with that. You know, I certainly can live with that. How about John Tortorella? You, of course, know him from your playing days. I think something changed in him after he left the Rangers. I remember having a conversation with him when he was let go by the Rangers, and he was taking the job with Vancouver. And I had him on the air, and I said, you're going to have to change, John. You can't pull the stuff you pulled in New York and Tampa up in Vancouver, man. They're going to drive you up a wall. And obviously, yeah. Vancouver didn't go well for him. And then when I saw him in Columbus, listen, he's still ornery. I'm sure he's very short and curt with the media and sometimes drives you guys crazy. I genuinely like the guy, but he can get on your nerves. I think he's a lot different than he was in Tampa and New York. You know him better than I do. Is that a right assessment? Does he seem to be a little bit more relaxed than he was 10 years ago?
I think there are definitely components of his coaching style that are absolutely. He's a smart man. He's a guy that understands where he's at. He says he's on his back nine of his career. This is it. He's a guy that has nothing to lose. You know, there is moments, and this year the theme for this team was find a way to win. And he said what that means for him is he has to turn away when mistakes happen. He knows there's momentum swings. He knows that the team's not going to play a perfect game. He knows that players that he just spoke to and told not to do a thing will go out and do it. He said he has to turn away because these players, you know, we got a lot of European players that play a certain way. They want to play with skill, but Torts is impatient with them. Now, there's still the flair with Torts. There's still the part we love about him, the passion, the in-your-face, the stand-up for his guys. He'll never lose that fire. But he's definitely backed it off a little bit. He's smarter. He's a little more reserved. He's, you know what, I agree with you. He's a joy to be around. He's a guy that right now, these players love him. There's been times this season, I'm sure, where they're saying, you know, we need a break from this guy
right.
for a few days. But that's just how it goes in this when he's building what he's done here.
Yeah, great job. And listen, all year long, too, I've done a lot of Columbus Blue Jacket games. You're always there for an interview. You're always there to say hello and get me educated on what's happening with the club. And I really appreciate it all year. Best of luck the rest of the way, man. Hopefully we'll get all in touch, Don, a little bit later on as you continue to move on.
Anytime, man. This is my pleasure, and thanks for the kind words.
You got it. That's Jody Shelley, of course, former hockey player in the National Hockey League. Sure, working with the Columbus Blue Jackets, always does a great job with their games, and of course played a heck of a career as well. Bounced around quite a bit with the San Jose Sharks, Blue Jackets, Rangers, Flyers, and somewhat of an enforcer, but really analyzes the game well. And that Columbus Blue Jackets team is just pulling off a miracle, man. I mean, we could really start assessing where this all ends up historically. But I will say this. I think a lot of it depends on what Columbus ends up doing. And what I mean by that is if Columbus, say, gets swept by Boston or Toronto and goes quietly in that good night, I think it makes it even more of an upset. If Columbus pulls off like what the Kings did in 2012, because remember when the Kings beat the Vancouver Canucks in five, we were in shock. Our jaws dropped. An 8 seed just knocked off the team that went to the Stanley Cup final the year before, won the President's Trophy that year, and gets beat in the first round in 5 games, down 3 games to none. I mean, just ridiculous, right? And we don't think about that because the Kings went on to win the Stanley Cup that year, went to the conference final the next year, and then won the Stanley Cup again in 2014. So we don't look at that as a great upset because the Kings ended up going on a mini dynasty run. So if the Blue Jackets win the Cup this year, go to the conference final next year, win the Cup the next year after that, maybe we won't look back as fondly at that sweep. We'll just look at kind of like the Patriots beat the Rams the first time in the Super Bowl was, hey, we thought it was an upset at the time, but look at the dynasty they became. So what the Blue Jackets end up doing down the stretch will ultimately determine how we look at that sweep of Tampa. But I got to tell you, in the now, living in the moment, tell me something that was more shocking. I mean, I'll be the first to admit it. I gave Columbus no shot. Zero. I mean, at least with the Islanders, I picked the Islanders to win that series. Many other people did as well, not to pick in a sweep, but you listen, it was still a team that had home ice advantage. It's still a team that had a better record than Pittsburgh during the course of the year. But the Tampa Bay Lightning were a juggernaut, 21 points ahead of the second-place team for the President's Trophy. What a plus 34 goal differential over second-place Calgary. They scored 100 more goals than they allowed. Kucherov, Stamkos, Johnson, Killorn, Point, Hedman, which was a huge loss, by the way, because he obviously wasn't 100% in the first 2 games, and they certainly missed him in the last 2. Vasilevsky's going to win the Vezina. How awkward are going to be the awards ceremony in Vegas? There's a very good possibility at the awards ceremony in Vegas, they're going to announce John Cooper for the Jack Adams Trophy for Coach of the Year, right? Vasilevsky's going to win the Vezina Trophy for Goaltender of the Year. All right, Kucherov has already won the Ross for the points. He's going to win the MVP. He's going to win the Hart Trophy. Tampa Bay is going to walk out with all the hardware. Didn't win a game in the postseason. And maybe the team that wins the Stanley Cup at the end of the day is not going to have anybody winning anything. Right? I mean, maybe the Islanders win it. Maybe Columbus wins it. Heck, Vegas might turn around and win it after missing last year. It's really incredible, but I think history will ultimately determine where this lands. But right now, I can't think of a bigger upset. It's absolutely incredible. Believe it or not, there were other games last night. The Jets tie the Blues as, again, the road team wins. Four straight games in the series, all won by the visiting team. And this one was a problem for St. Louis. We're scoreless through the first two periods of the game. And then Tarasenko scores 35 seconds in on the power play, and you're thinking, all right, this is finally going to turn. Home team's going to win. Blues are going to take a 3-1 series lead. But then Scheifele scores as that line of Scheifele, Connor, and Wheeler combined 7:33 into the third period to tie the game at one. And then that line with Connor scoring 6:02 into overtime gives the Jets the victory. And so now it becomes the best of three series with Winnipeg getting two of those three games on home ice. But is that a good thing? Because nobody's been able to win at home in this series. And Winnipeg's got a history of struggling at home recently in the postseason. So I'm not sure if that's good news or bad news. But the way I look at it is eventually a home team's going to have to win the series. And if it ends up being Winnipeg in game five, then they would take the 3-2 series lead and put the St. Louis Blues on the brink. Faceoffs continue to be a problem for Winnipeg. They only won 39% of the draws. This game was conservatively called. Only three power play opportunities in the game. Two for St. Louis. As I said, they converted on the first goal and the only goal of the game from Tarasenko. So that series is even at two games apiece. And I got to stick to my guns on what I said going into this game. That if the Golden Knights win, they're going to win the series. I actually said that the Lightning and the Penguins would have a better chance of coming back down 3-0 than the Sharks would have coming back 3-1. I'm going to stand by that. Again, a no-show for the Sharks as Golden Knights win 5-0 in this game to take the 3-1 series lead. No Joe Thornton in this game. Pacioretty has a four-point night. That's huge. Only 28 shots on goal for the Sharks, really not facing elimination, but certainly a desperate team on the road, just couldn't generate a lot of offense. Pacioretty scores a minute and 11 seconds in, and then when Theodore scores, I think the backbreaker late in that first period to make it 2-0, I never got a sense that the Sharks were going to have an answer the rest of the way. And if Pacioretty's going to wake up, and it looks like he may, as he now has four goals so far in these playoffs, which is really amazing, and Stone continues to just be unbelievable, too. What has he got? Like, not 9-10 points already in the postseason. Maybe Vegas can duplicate what they did last year, especially with the one seed Calgary down 2-1 in their series against Colorado. Very much wide open. Dallas and Nashville beating each other up. So I think the Sharks are done, not mathematically, but certainly in a lot of trouble. I'm going to be doing the pre and post for Sharks Vegas on Westwood One tomorrow. We're going to have coverage beginning at 9:45, so check your local listings for that. You can also find it on SiriusXM, so I'll be proud to be a part of that. And I think the Sharks are in big-time trouble to see if they can find a way to survive that series and at least force a Game 6 back in Vegas coming up over the weekend. All right, let's hear from you at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. Let's go. Joseph says, assuming San Jose can't pull off a dramatic comeback, should DeBoer be concerned for his job? Do you see some sort of teardown a la the Rangers in the near future? Yes, I think Pete DeBoer would be in a little bit of trouble here. There were so many expectations around the Sharks team, and if they go quietly in the first round in five games with home ice advantage, the fact that they played so poorly down the stretch, costing themselves the number one seed in the conference. Not that it would have mattered anyway, the way they were playing, but still, these are things that were earmarked to let's see how they do in the postseason. Can they turn it back on? And they don't. DeBoer had been there a while, went to a Stanley Cup final with the Sharks back in 2016, but DeBoer still lost his job in New Jersey after taking them to the Stanley Cup final in 2012. So I don't think that saves DeBoer's job. So I do think there's going to be some major changes. And so we're talking about changes to coaching was made official yesterday. Todd McClellan, the new head coach of the Los Angeles Kings. There was major speculation he'd go to Buffalo, but his son was playing in the Frozen Four in Buffalo, so people kind of misunderstood him being there for that as interviewing for the Sabre job. So he's the new head coach of the Los Angeles Kings, and I think he'd do a great job there. Forever TH says it's official that the Lightning, or is it official the Lightning are now the most overrated team in NHL history? How can you say they're not? Now, this is also a little bit of an issue for the Lightning. I thought it was a positive for them going in, but it's kind of a negative, is that this has been a team that's been knocking on the door, right? I mean, this is a team that went to the Stanley Cup final in 2015, went to the conference final last year. You know, they were up 3-2 against Washington, so they have now lost 6 consecutive postseason games, which is incredible. So yeah, that's certainly going to be in the conversation. A team loaded with talent, a team that has had postseason success but just couldn't get over the hump, and then they go and have this historic regular season and bow out in colossal dumpster style fashion. And another thing, a narrative that's kind of been bouncing around here, they just gave John Cooper a contract extension. He's not losing his job, okay? And matter of fact, maybe they can pull a Virginia and go from losing in the first round to winning the whole thing next year. This is certainly something that's going to hang over the Lightning's head. I don't care if they go undefeated next year, it's going to become a thing, but I don't think firing John Cooper is necessarily going to be the way to go there. Let's see. Bradley says, are the Penguins following the path of the Blackhawks and Kings? They've technically lost their last 6 playoff games. Love the podcast. Well, are they getting older? Well, I mean, Sidney Crosby had a 100-point season. Evgeny Malkin was hurt, but still had 72 points. When he's healthy, he's still one of the most dominant players in the league. Murray's young. Gensel's young. Letang, he's had his injury histories, but he's not an old man by any stretch. I don't think that they're old necessarily, but maybe is it stale? Or maybe is it just that they had a bad matchup? But I kind of look deeper at the Penguins. I mean, this is a team that going into the last month of the season haven't even shored up a Stanley Cup playoff spot yet. You know, they're not a championship team anymore. I mean, they're starting to get away from that. Now, I don't think it's time to blow it up. I don't think they're going the Kings and the Blackhawks just yet. But another year of this, another first-round exit, or God forbid if you're a Penguin fan missing the playoffs completely next year, maybe they're heading in that direction. I just don't think they're there yet. Daniel says, hey, Don, I got to say, even as a Ranger fan, I'm kind of hoping for a Toronto versus Islanders conference final. It would be an epic storyline and a crazy series to watch. But, of course, you probably know who I would want to see win that. I'm looking at these matchups. I mean, Columbus is a tremendous story because now I think they kind of become the darlings of the sports world. And a lot of hockey fans want to see people become interested in their sport. I think Columbus can do that. Plus, they play a heck of a hockey game. Let's not lose sight of the fact that Columbus deserved to win that series, all right? Maybe nobody picked them, but they've got Panarin, Dzingel, Duchesne. Seth Jones is a legitimate star. Bobrovsky's been a regular season goaltender that has been elite, just hasn't been able to put it together in the postseason until this year. But Columbus, Toronto, Boston, the Islanders, the winner of Carolina, Washington, I mean, any of those combinations down the stretch in the second, third, and Stanley Cup final is going to be pretty exciting. NYR Fanatic says, is it fair to say the Blue Jackets sweeping the Lightning in the first round is the biggest upset in NHL playoff history? Well, again, it's in the conversation, but only time will tell. But I will say this, the difference between the Canucks losing in the first round to the Kings and the Lightning losing in the first round to the Columbus, Vancouver won the President's Trophy that year by 2 points. Tampa won it by 21 points. I mean, there wasn't even a second that they were not going to win the President's Trophy. It's unbelievable. Troy says, first off, congratulations to the Columbus Blue Jackets and all their fans. Their first playoff series win will always be remembered. Unfortunately for me, all my brackets got busted. But, hey, that's the NHL, right? So, Don LaGreca, where did the Tampa Bay Lightning go from here? That's a good question. Remember, they didn't do anything at the deadline. Now, you can't kill them for that because the Islanders didn't do anything at the deadline and they ended up getting out of the first round. I think they got to get a little tougher, you know, and I don't know how they do that, but if they had a Reeves, if they had a Wilson, I think that can go a long way to helping them. I can't pinpoint specifically how it might have helped in this series, but just overall, not allowing their stars to get pushed around. Maybe Kucherov doesn't feel like he has to go out there and retaliate if there's somebody that can play a physical game. And, you know, being healthy. I think they were going to lose the series anyway because they got swept. But Victor Hedman not being 100% turned out to be a big deal. It really did. So you don't want to get overly crazy and say that we got to blow this thing up. I still think they're exceptionally talented. And I do think next year might be a different season for them. David says, for all the talk of Columbus trying to avoid Tampa, it turned out to be the best thing. Crazy, but I'm happy for the Blue Jackets getting the first playoff series win in franchise history. Big props to Torts, too. His coaching was rather masterful that series. It was, and I'm glad that Jody brought up that seems like he has changed a little bit, and I think he's really done a terrific job as coach. Heywood W says, the Lightning being swept is shocking. It's like a Ferrari hitting a blizzard. Do you trade it in for a Honda? like the Islanders or the Columbus Blue Jackets. I think you got to come up with a system. I mean, we talked about it with Jody Shelley, is that nobody's going to ever turn down talent. All right. But it's not the NBA where I think the most talented team usually wins. But in the NHL, you got to have a system. But you also need talent too. And you know, the Columbus Blue Jackets have talent. We just outlined that. But like Jody said, when things aren't going well and you're kind of in panic, when you play a system and you memorize that system, it's easier muscle memory wise to fall back and do the things you necessarily need to do. When sometimes it's Heckle and Jekyll and it's crazy and you don't know, when you catch yourself out of position and you think just your skills are going to work your way through it, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out that way. Courtney says, this is kind of a stupid question, but if the Islanders and the Jackets have to wait a week or to 10 days for the next series to start, does this time off help them or does it hinder them from getting the intensity restarted? It's interesting because Jody said that the people around the National Hockey League say you always take rest, and I do understand it's a long 82-game season, and even though the Blue Jackets and the Islanders only played four more games in the postseason, there's a lot of bodies that need that rest, but I do think that there is a line of demarcation where you can get too much rest. Both these teams are riding a wave of emotion that it's going to be stifled a bit by having to play a team that's also going to be riding a wave of winning and have played more recently. Now, you want those teams to beat up on each other, but maybe having them both go seven games, maybe five, six, get a couple of days off. But at some point, once it gets close to a week, I think that's an issue. And I think history has shown that. I remember the 2003 Stanley Cup final. You know, the Devils went seven with Ottawa in the conference final. The Ducks swept Minnesota. The Ducks had to wait like 9-10 days, and they were completely flat in the first two games of the series and fell behind. Then they eventually got their legs and forced a game seven. But you don't want to put yourself in a situation where you're a little lackadaisical in that first game and you get bit. So we'll have to wait and see. But I do think there is a line of having enough rest or too much rest. So I do think that line is somewhere always around four. Once it exceeds 5-6 days, I think it becomes a bit of a problem. Robert says, how does a team like Tampa that won 62 games during the regular season approach the offseason? Do they view the playoffs as an aberration or do they make changes? Well, I think you got to do both. I think you got to look at it and say, we can't panic. These things happen, but what can we do to try to get better? And I said, adding a little toughness probably wouldn't be a bad idea. Okay. Making little tweaks here and there. So you're not blowing it up, but I think it'd also be foolish to just say, hey, it was an aberration. We're going to go right back next year and do it all over again. And maybe their approach is a little bit different. And maybe John Cooper can adjust some things on maybe how he handled the series. I think one of the biggest problems as well for Tampa was the fact we just talked about rest versus rust. How is it for a team that basically had nothing to play for since Christmas, having to take on a team that had to go almost, you know, to the final weekend and literally to the second last day of the season to clinch a playoff spot? Maybe there's an edge there in a league that's so close to begin with that you just can't help but allow them to take advantage of. So I'm sure John Cooper will look at that all. All right, we had a big one because it was a big historic day with the two sweeps and the big upset, certainly with the Blue Jackets winning. So we wanted to talk to Brendan Burke. Thanks to him from MSG Television. Thanks, of course, to Jody Shelley over at Fox in Columbus. Does a great job as the color analyst on television there. Now those guys have to take a seat and watch their teams play on national television. I'm sure that's a fair trade for them. Blue Jackets in the second round for the first time in franchise history. The Islanders in the second round for just the second time since 1990. So congratulations to those two teams. Have fun tonight with the other games that are going on in the NHL. Let's not forget that. There are games tonight as some series do continue. An extra day off for the Hurricanes and the Washington Capitals, so they're not playing tonight, but three other series will continue. Bruins and the Leafs from Toronto. Toronto's up 2-1. That's at 7. At 8 o'clock, it's the Stars and the Predators from Dallas. Nashville's up 2-1. And what I think is a very interesting game at 10 tonight, the Avalanche and the Flames from Colorado. Can the Flames recover after a couple of tough back-to-back losses? And the Avalanche right now riding high with Nathan MacKinnon maybe in the conversation as one of the best players right now in the National Hockey League. So all this to be talked about coming up tomorrow. Thanks again for everybody listening. You can get in touch with me at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York. and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast on the ESPN app, Google Play Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.